I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic. It's a great honor to be able to introduce my friend Robert J., my ex-wife. We were looking for somebody to officiate her funeral. They said, we want somebody spiritual, we want somebody from the program to do it. And so the most spiritual guy I knew in Athens is one of the biggest guys named Mike, Big Mike. Mike will be the great guy. He goes, no. There's a spiritual giant that I know, Robert. We made the arrangements, and he came, and it was really a beautiful service. I'll never forget it. And thank you, Robert, for coming and helping our family through that trying day. Here's Robert.
Robert, alcoholic. Thank you for the opportunity, Tim. I don't know if I'm going to be able to speak as eloquently as the chairperson. I felt like she was one of those people when you listen to an audio book, I was like, man, she's good at this. I was like, okay. Normally whenever I tell my story, I like to go to a passage of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. If y'all don't know what this is the basic text to our program. Everything from the program is outlined in this book right here. It's on page 45. It says, lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. That means we have written a book which we believe to be spiritual as well as moral. And it means, of course, that we are going to talk about God. Now, start off with that because that is what changed my life. If you do what is outlined in this book, it will change your life. And this is how it's changed mine. And so apparently, they have my resume like right here. I got to get a little reminder of it. Some people, my sobriety date is November 1st, 2018. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. I have a home group. I'm the GSR of Athens Young People's Group in Athens, Georgia. So to start that off, we're going to talk about what it was like. Growing up, I grew up without my mother in the picture. They split up when I was 2 years old. So initially, I had a hole inside of me that I always wanted to fill. I had my grandmother that was close by, and she became like my mother figure. By the time I was 7 years old, my dad had started to date another lady that he would go on to marry. I had an older stepbrother who molested me. From that day forward, I was like, I want to be the baddest person on the planet. I don't want anybody to treat me like that. I'm not going to put up with anything like that. It was crazy. I remember getting a mindset where like I looked up to gangsters like Lucky Luciano and Al Capone. The big old school gangsters, that's what I wanted to be like. I remember from a very young age coming to terms with the rest of my life is going to end in prison because people like me, from where I'm from, what we do, that's what happens. And that was at 7 years old. So we go on, I start experimenting with drinking. Obviously, we're like in the 2000s. I start experimenting with weed, all these other things. My grandmother dies when I'm 15 years old. I was a solid A student before that. After that, I was like, there's no reason to continue life after this. I never passed another grade after that. I would go on to start going to jail. I went to jail, back and forth, in and out of jail. December 20th, 2013, I had a son. I tell y'all what, when I held him in my arms, for the first time, that was the most amazing feeling I've ever felt in my life. December 29th of that same year, I get locked up with 5 aggravated assault charges. It would have been attempted murder if they could have charged me with that. I was looking at spending 100 years in prison. What's crazy is I'm locked up during that time. My mom ends up deciding she's going to send me some scripture, and she sends me the story of Job. And if y'all don't know the story of Job, Job ends up losing his children. Like, they end up dying. And I was like, why would she send me this? I was so mad. I was like, man. I was like, what is wrong with this woman? I was like, I'm going to look for something more inspirational in this book. Ended up, I had found the story of Joseph where he goes to prison and everything, and then he gets out and he's second in command to Pharaoh, and I was like, that's the life I want to live. Like, hopefully that'll happen. Obviously, man, I want to give my life to God. And then before, when I was like 8 years old, I was like, I want to give my life to God. But at that point in time, I was like, man, if you get me out of this situation, I will give my life to you. What was crazy was I ended up somehow, just by the grace of God, I ended up, the charges got dismissed before they went before the grand jury. And I only got charged with like some violent misdemeanor charges. When I went to court, my lawyer's like, all right, so you're going to tell them you got a drug problem and you're going to go to RSAT. You can do 6 months. I was like, you just tell me where to sign, buddy. I signed that paper, went there. I ended up doing 11 and a half months. Afterwards, I end up getting out, and I start to somewhat change my life around. Probably I wasn't out maybe 10 months, and I get locked back up again. Story behind that was I went to a party, and I ended up having sex with a girl where both of us were drinking, and another girl had said that the girl was too intoxicated to consent to me having sex with her. So I end up getting charged with rape. I get arrested for that, and that's a life sentence charge. And they don't just send you to where they send drug dealers when you get charged with that. They send you to really fun places. And ended up, I didn't have no bond that time. Everybody that I was locked up in there was charged with murder. Ended up, they were on the front page of the paper. There was one guy who was at work, tried to kill a guy with a hammer. And they said that he was beating the guy for over 5 minutes before they showed up. Said it looked like he was splitting wood with a hammer. That was just another, that was just every single person that was in my dorm. You know, it was either me or them. There was no understanding at that point in time. What was crazy was during that time, I had a guy that I knew from the streets was in there, and he had a bunch of crazy charges too. And he was talking on the phone, and he said, hey, I got somebody who wants to talk to you. Come over here. So he ends up bringing I go over there, and I get on the phone. The lady's like, what are you in there for, this and that? And she's like, I believe I can get you out, mister. I believe I can get you out. And I was like, okay. She's like, do you have somebody on the outside that I can contact? And I was like, yeah, you can call my dad. So before we had talked to any lawyers before, it was like just 10 grand just to represent me. That's not anything else because it was such a high-profile case or whatever. Well, this lady says, she talks to my dad and she says, I got a money-back guarantee that he'll be out within 90 days and it'll cost 2 grand. Do you think you have that type of money? And he said, yes, ma'am. She said, well, when can you meet me? And he said, I can meet you this Thursday. And I think it was like a Tuesday or something. Well, ended up my dad come to see me that Saturday. That Saturday, when my dad come to see me, ended up, I was like, oh, yeah, we're about to get some great news. The lady's about to help me out or whatever. And apparently, I don't know, some was like some sort of, not a lawyer, but like a legal representation of some sort or whatever. But my dad said, I wanted to talk to you before I made this deal with this woman. I was like, what's he talking about? He said, the lady said that she wanted some hair off your head, that she wanted a picture of you, and wanted some dirt from this ground. And I told my dad right then, I said, look, I've seen the power of God set me free before. I said, I know that he'll save me again. I said, you tell that lady, we don't want anything from her. Ended up, what was crazy was around that same time was the time that I was able to get released from that case around the same time. I end up getting released. I'm starting to try to deal with life. My son's mom, I think around that time, she had relapsed, and she was a great mother all before. I had spent 10 years in and out of jail and prison, and she was always there taking care of my child while I was locked up. And he was a very good-minded kid that didn't really have anything to do with me. There was one day, like, I was kind of noticing signs when I come over there to pick him up. Like, everybody in the house would be asleep at, like, 3 in the afternoon or whatever. And I'm like, something's going on here. And then, you know, just, like, we know tweakers when we see them and stuff. It's like, something ain't good. And then my son, he seemed like he ain't been bathed. And then one day, but I'm just like, let me cut her some slack. I've been locked up this whole time. Who am I to say anything? One time I pick him up and he has like welt marks across his back. I'm like, I was supposed to have him for the weekend. I'm like, I'm not going to take him home. Monday, I go to talk to people. I was there when he was born, signed the birth certificate, but they're like, you have no rights, Mr. Jones. They're like, you're not legitimized, nothing. They're like, you can't do anything about this. You need to hire you a lawyer, and that's how you can deal with this. So what do? The only thing that I knew how to do, I was like, I'm going to start selling drugs. Needless to say, that was not a good idea. So I end up, I get busted with possession with intent to distribute. While I'm in there, man, it was crazy. I felt like God was telling me this was my last time. That he wasn't, like I was guilty that time. I definitely was guilty. And I believe that there was many other things that I was guilty of that I never got found guilty of, or no, they never prosecuted me for. I made a plea with the judge to be able to go to DRC. During DRC, I definitely wasn't serious. I really had in my mind, as soon as I get back to where I can, I'm going to get back there and get it. I'm going to go back to selling drugs. I'm going to go back to doing drugs. For some reason, through DRC, I met a girl that was she was in women's services in Athens, and she was actually graduating. Man, this girl went to meetings every day. She had like a sponsor and actually worked the steps and stuff. I was like, what in the world? I was like, I don't know about that. I was like, I don't know about that. Like, it was crazy too, because I probably had maybe 6 to 8 years of that point of being mandated to go to meetings on and off. I never actually met somebody who wanted to stay sober and was actually doing it. Most of the people that I knew were just killing times, and they would do drugs and stuff on the side. They would drink on the side or whatever. So it was crazy for me to actually meet somebody like that. I go to some AA meetings. I end up going to AYP. I go to AYP for the first time, and I hear my first speaker meeting. And this girl talks about how she had been to prison twice, one time for 4 and then 6 years, total of 10 years in prison. Both times were actually for selling meth. I think the second time she went to federal prison. This lady turned around, got her life back together. She ended up getting all her charges exonerated. She started to work at a lawyer's office. She had a car, and she had, what I saw at that time, was all the material things that came, and so I was like, okay, there might be something to this. I was like, but I don't got a problem. I don't got a problem. Life goes on. I get locked up while I'm in DRC. Because crazy thing is, I'm in DRC, sitting there, I got some girlfriend, and I don't know what happened, but I figured I was going to go Grand Theft Auto on her or whatever, like when you hit the button and you like pull them out of the car, because I was going to drive the car that day. Like, I don't know who she was talking to, but it wasn't me. And so grabbed her out of the car. Well, she apparently did not like that too much. So I get locked up. I do like 4.5 months that time. And while I'm in there, I'm waiting to like go to prison or whatever. My son's mom actually gets locked up, and the kids get taken into custody. My son and then her other son. But like the day before I get out, the CASA caseworker finds me, and she's like, I've been looking all over for you. Things go on, go through that, and I'm in DRC at this point in time, and I'm actually like, I'm drinking. I'm doing all the things I can do to still pass drug tests. But for some reason, I couldn't stay sober. I couldn't deal with myself. I couldn't deal with just living a life with no... It's one of the stories in the back where the guy's a pharmacist, and he said, I lost my right to a chemical state of mind. Ended up, that's what I was trying to fill with anything that I could. I drank 2 beers Halloween night. I got to go to court the next morning. The next morning ends up, I go in there and they wipe the floor with me. They tell me that they're going to take my rights away, that there was nothing that I could do about it. And I'm talking about, that tore me apart. I never felt so hopeless in my life. Man, I didn't know what to do. And luckily at that point in time, I had somebody that was actually working a program, had probably about 7 months of sobriety at that time. And they were like, Robert, you probably need to get sober. Man, I'm like hurting. I'm like, I don't know what that has to do with anything. And you know, cause drinking, drugs, all that was the solution to my problems. Cause I had a hole inside of my heart where I didn't know how to deal with myself. I couldn't sit alone. I always had to have somebody there with me because my mom was never there for me. And ended up, I decided to get a sponsor. I start to work the steps. It was actually interesting because I didn't know that I wanted to stay sober at first. I just knew that the pain was great enough that I was willing to try something different. I'm going to go to a passage in page 25. It says, if you are as serious alcoholic as we believe there is no middle road solution. We were in a position where life was becoming impossible. If we had passed into the region from which there is no return through human aid, we have but two alternatives. One was to go on to the bitter end, blotting out consciousness of our intolerable situation as best we could, and the other was to accept spiritual help. And so that's what I decided to do. I actually didn't know what I was volunteering for at the point in time. About 30 days in, I decided I was going to pick up a chip. I'd never picked up a white chip. Ended up, 30 days in, I was like, okay, I'm going to give this thing a shot. In the first part of my sobriety, I am trying to work the steps. And I was focusing on my steps, but I took away every chemical out of my life and started dating. I started dating women in the rooms. I want to say around the time, I want to say it was like 7 or 8. I get to 7 or 8, I believe the first one died on me, the first girl that I've been with. Then later on, more of them kept dying. It became real to me then at that point in time. That this was unacceptable. And it was crazy, too, because at first I was like, man, it's like every girl I date, she relapses and dies. I was like, man, I must be cursed. He's like, man, you don't have the power to get anybody sober or make them relapse. He's like, but while they're on the way down, you don't have to be a stepping stone on the way down. When I'm going to somebody I've been intimately with, and I'm at their funeral watching them get buried, you know, it'll change you. So I was like, man, let me get serious about working these steps. So I started working the steps really passionately. Started going through the big book. And ended up, you know, I got sober in 2018. I ended up fully losing my rights to my son. I was supposed to have, like, visitation rights. But I haven't seen him in over 6.5 years. I haven't seen him. Haven't seen him, talked to him, or anything. As we go on, COVID comes around. We don't have any in-person meetings. In Athens, there's a lot of meetings that you can go to all the time. My life started to get chaotic. There's a bunch of things that I did. Something just wasn't right. Something wasn't right. I was arguing. Obviously, everybody was arguing about politics. And somehow, I done went from career criminal to I am like a political expert because of sobriety. And I was definitely going to tell some people how I felt, too. And I remember looking back on my grandfather who had died. There was a subconscious thought in my head that if I wanted my life to be better, that I needed to be involved in church. I needed to go to church. So around that time, 2021, I start going to a church. And at that point in time, it's a 3-week period from when I started the church to what I'm about to tell y'all happens. Ends up, we're reading through Bill Wilson's story, and we're doing a big book study of it. And man, I had probably led well over 100 people through this specific passage. And I had never seen these things jump off the page like they did at that point in time. And he talks about how he absolutely surrendered his life over to God. And it was with no reservations. And I was like, I had never done that. In my sobriety, I smoked. I ended up going to vaping and ended up quitting vaping after this experience that I'm about to tell y'all about. Before that, I was like, I'm not quitting smoking. Before that, I was like, I had an idea of what giving my life to God was. And if you read through the third step, it actually talks about how you don't need to have like any preconceived notions about it or whatever. Those are things that hold you back from the power of God moving in your life. And that's actually what I believe I had for 2.5 years in my sobriety. The one thing, too, was like not having sex till marriage. That was one of my preconceived notions. I was like, I am definitely going to try a car before I buy it. That is what is going to happen. But through working the program, and having a sponsor who would tell me things that seemed counterproductive. And normally at first I actually wouldn't listen to him. I'm like, I'm not going to do that. That is dumb. We're not praying about this situation. Like, I don't know how that's going to help anything. But then I would not do it, and it would end up bad. And so eventually, after banging my head against the wall, I'd do what he said. And it worked time and time again. So I built faith, and I built some ideas and characteristics of God. And I was like, man, I was like, if God truly is who he is and he's a good God, then why would he give me a wife who I'd be unsatisfied with sexually? Faith is an action word. It's like, man, if you believe that, you're going to act upon it. That's what my sponsor told me. So I was like, and I'm reading through Bill's story, and I'm like, I'm going to give my life to God with no reservations. And at this point in time, I'm going to a church. They're having this thing where they baptize several hundred people every week. And they're like, you need to get baptized. I'm like, I don't even know what you do that for. I'm like, Jesus did it. I should probably do it. I don't know. I'm like, I'm gonna do this, and I'm going to be like, Bill, I want to give my life to God with no reservations. And so the guy baptizes me, and as soon as I hit the water, I go completely out, unconscious. 10 to 15 minutes later, I wake up with the guy holding me inside this baptismal pool, and he's praying for me. And see, there's certain things in the book that it talks about, but I think that we really get away from a spiritual experience, and we try to downplay it. But man, I am here to tell you that there is more of God all the time, and he has the power to help people through anything that they are going through in their life. And what was crazy was at that point in time, obviously I had notions of what I thought my life was like giving it to God. But later on, I'm talking about, I used to listen to gangster rap because I want to be big gangster. So ends up, next thing I know, I get a feeling on the inside of me that I got to quit listening to that. I can't listen to that no more. Ends up, I used to throw my trash out on the side of the road. Because I'm like, man, I remember what it was like being in that cell. And then being like, hey, y'all want to come clean up today? Yeah. I'm like, I'm helping my brothers out in the Jane gang. You know what I'm saying? I'm helping them out. Let me throw some trash out. Next thing I know, I get this feeling on the inside of me that I can't do that no more. So it ends up, I go to make amends. And before I made amends, because you do the steps, because that's what you do to recover. Before I did them like begrudgingly, I would make the amends begrudgingly. But where the real change happened was when I ended up where I genuinely wanted to make it right to these people. Where it actually hurt me on the inside, the things that I'd done to them. And I wanted to bring them justice for the things that I did. I'm talking about an absolute change. I'm going to read another passage in the big book. It is on 25. One of the last paragraphs, then I go up to the next two. It says, there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings, which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When therefore we were approached by those whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us to do but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We had found much of heaven, and we had been rocketed into the fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. And this is the part that I love right here. This is my experience. What's crazy, I do big book studies with guys and other groups all the time. And what's crazy was we had literally went through the passage above this and the one below it. Both of them that I read. And I swear, they put this in the book. I'm like, I don't know what happened, but they went back in time and they put this in the book. It was not here before. Because, you know, when you're doing a study, you like read through. I'm like, y'all ain't going to make me look dumb. I got to read this in context, right? It says, the great fact is just this, and nothing less, that we have had deep and effective spiritual experiences which have revolutionized our whole attitude toward life, toward our fellows, and towards God's universe. The central fact of our lives today is the absolute certainty that our Creator has entered into our hearts and lives in a way which is indeed miraculous. He has commenced to accomplish those things for us which we could never do by ourselves. And man, I'm here to tell y'all that ended up, y'all heard that I was a multiple time convicted felon. I ended up after those experiences, I radically changed my life. I stopped listening to the same music. I quit vaping everything, quit watching TV, all that stuff. Next thing I know, my friends are like, this is the process of salvation. And they're like, you get saved, you get baptized, you do this stuff. And then they're like, and you go on mission trips. And I'm like, I don't think that's for me. I'm like, we got plenty of people dying all around here. I don't need to go overseas. There's plenty of work to do right here in Athens, Georgia. And they're like, well, how do you know unless you try it? So I ended up, I'm like, okay. I'm like, I'm a convicted felon. I can't get a passport. I apply for my passport. I get accepted. Ends up, next thing I know, I'm like, I'm going to go with my church on a two-week trip. Or I'm going to go with this other church I know for a two-week trip. For some reason, they're not open up to go. Ends up, an opportunity comes up to go with a lady named Heidi Baker. And ends up, if y'all don't know who she is, if I was going to study the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the number one person I could probably learn from would be Bill Wilson. If I was going to learn mission work, Heidi Baker would be the number one person to learn from. And they had an opportunity to go with her, to go to Israel, South Africa, and Mozambique. I fly over there 7 days before the war breaks out. We're there when the war breaks out. We escape into Jordan. Ends up there, from there we go to South Africa. Ends up, I had seen poverty like I had never seen in my life. I had seen situations and circumstances where me sitting in the cell here in the United States looked like a good circumstance. Right. You know, I go on to Mozambique, where they were actually the fifth poorest country in the world. And I see where this lady, from her simple yes, ended up turning to her feeding hundreds of thousands of children in that nation every single day and being involved in that. While I'm sitting there playing with one of the kids at the base, I went to four different bases in four different nations over there. And one of the bases had 1,200 kids in that specific base. And one of the kids was about my son's age. And I'm with one of the other girls who's a missionary. We're drawing with him. And he predominantly speaks Portuguese. And so the translation is breaking up. He's like, maybe y'all can talk to the lady who's over me and you can get the paper. And he's like, that we could play with or something. That's what we're thinking that he's saying or whatever. But we don't know what he's saying. So we call the lady over to interpret what he's saying. No, that's not what he's saying. He's saying, can you sign the paper so that way you and her can adopt this kid? I'm telling you what, a sponsored guy that I never thought would get sober. Probably the ones that stayed sober were actually the ones where I told them I wasn't going to sponsor them at first. And ended up, they stayed sober. You know, now I have a sponsee that has over 6 years. His daughter calls me Uncle Robert. The thing is, I know that I haven't been able to see my son in over 6.5 years. But I believe in the promises of God that's been on my life. I believe that I'm going to see my son, but the thing is, through AA and through my sobriety, that he's going to have a dad that he can come home to, that I'm not going to be that same person that I was when he left. And that's what I live for today. Man, I live because God has given me such a great life that I didn't deserve. I think about all the things that I did and everything, but it was by grace and mercy that I'm standing here today. Man, I think about it. I should be in prison for the rest of my life. Absolutely, no doubt. I should definitely be dead. There are plenty of people that should have killed me. Man, I thought about it. It's like if God were to never do another thing for me, I would still spend the rest of my life serving Him. So ended up, before I met Tim, the opportunity actually come up to go to the underground church in Saudi Arabia. And ended up, I was like, man, when I was out here on the streets, I was like, I would go to any hood. If I went to any prison, I would go to where it was banging at. That's where I wanted to go to. I was like, man, you're not going to stop me from going anywhere. I'll go to the darkest places. I'll go wherever you want me to go. And now that's what I do. I live my life to serve the Lord. I live my life to be a message because He has saved my life. And it all started through this program that is outlined in this book. And the thing was, when it talks about recovered in here, man, it talks about that actually going away from you. I haven't had a desire to do any drugs or drink in over 5.5 years. By far. None of those things. Those things have been everything that you work on your fourth and fifth step. Man, those things can be taken away from you. Everything that you do in the steps can be taken away from you. It talks about a power greater than yourself. I hear this one guy, he's like in a rock and roll band. He's like, man, you need to find a real power. That doorknob ain't going to work for you. And that's the same thing that I believe. I believe that there is a real power, that there's a living God that works, and He does miracles still today. It's for all of you that want it. You know, but it's not for the people that really want it. It's for the people that actually do it. I'm going to close with this. He spoke of a guy named Gus, and I actually worked for him for a period of time. And everybody that Gus hired would actually be in the program. They wouldn't hire anybody that wasn't trying to get sober. But this morning, we actually wake up to hearing one of those guys actually overdose and die. You know, this thing is very real. People are definitely out here dying because of it. But the thing is, I'm here to tell you that you can live, and that you can live a life abundantly beyond your imagination, beyond your wildest dreams. And it just keeps getting better. There is no depth or no end to the things that you can find in this program. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you for your story.
First I slept, and then I crept to a hope-filled dream. You rescued me, and finally, waking there I see. I look into love's window for a soul. Take me where the promises are.